back. Esports Central Podcast, episode number 72. Boys, are you ready for this one?
Never ready, bro. Never ready. I'm about as ready for this one as Manchester was for Liverpool on the weekend.
Oof. Oh, they were ready. They just didn't do much. But apparently, I mean, according to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they lost better than they did last year.
I don't know if any better than Mourinho last year, you know?
Yeah. It's like, guys, we got dumpstered, but, you know. Oh, we lost. We didn't get dumpstered. It's progress, I guess.
Yeah. I guess that's what you could say.
I mean, unpopular opinion. I think Man United actually played pretty decent that game. But the problem they had in that game is the problem they have in every game. Their finishing from their players is atrocious, to say the least.
To say the very least,
I mean, this is coming from an Arsenal fan. Their finishing is bad, bad.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah. Oh, but it could get better.
Yeah. I mean, on depressing sports topics, LeBron James got absolutely, and the Lakers got smashed last night by the Celtics as well. So I woke up this morning very disappointed. It's not been a good sporting week for half the world, you know?
Yeah, it makes me very, whenever LeBron loses, I know you'll be quite sad in the morning. So it makes me very happy.
It's fine. My man Luka Doncic is playing Kawhi Leonard tonight. It should redeem things. Tomorrow morning, I should wake up happy or sad again. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, who knows? You know, have some faith in being sad, bro.
You know, you gotta have experience the lows to experience the highs or some shit, like they say.
Yeah.
You gotta experience the lows to appreciate the highs.
True, true, true. I mean, Alliance and Na'Vi in the Dota world, they've been experiencing the lows for the past 5 years. But, you know, the high's gonna be real good when it comes.
Yeah. One day. One day we will not be memeing when we say Na'Vi's back.
I believe in this major, actually. They're looking pretty decent. I think they're going to beat Alliance. We can take a bet here at the podcast there if you're ready, dude.
I'm ready, dog. Alliance is going to thump them, dog. 2-0, easy.
Whoa, all right. I believe in the Russian boys. If Na'Vi win, I'll tweet Na'Vi's back. If Na'Vi loses, oh, wait, how does the bet go? Yeah, if Na'Vi wins, Snare tweets Na'Vi's back. If Alliance wins, I tweet Alliance
back.
So
back.
Either
that's
way,
fair, yeah.
We're both going to look like idiots in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be, all I want is, if they want to really make it meme-tastic, right? For the third game, they should just agree. If they go to three games, be like, guys, if we get to game three, let's just agree to pick the same draft as Na'Vi Alliance in TI3. And then we'll see how it goes.
I think it was Lizard on Twitter actually put the meme. He's like, when he saw the Na'Vi Alliance bracket, he tweets that he just tweets a photo of like the TI3 finals, that last game. He's like, this is what we want. You're not going to get that, but it should be entertaining, right?
That'll be very entertaining. Well, actually, it'll be entertaining because it's not going to take long. It's just going to be Nico Baby styling all over the Russians for 2 hours. And he walks away.
Very possible. I mean, the biggest joke, if you think Dota people are sentimental, Prophecy just told me before the podcast started that Dignitas signed the old NIP roster, like the way back weird roster, like expecting this team to be good. Prophecy, what did you think about that on air now?
I mean, I think that Dignitas used to be a good team, and then they changed their logo to that stupid owl thing, and now they're terrible.
You fuck up the aesthetics, and then you can't play anymore.
Dude, I mean, anybody that's like been around in esports for quite a while, like the old Dignitas logo with that like little face.
The alien thing, yeah.
Yeah, the like alien face thing. Like, that thing had like some personality. They're just like, why would you pick an owl? And it's like complexity. They went from that like sort of semi-circle with the red and the silver, and they went and made like it's a cowboy star now because they're sponsored by the Cowboys. I'm like, why?
But nothing is worse.
You had a perfectly well-known logo. Why are you changing it?
Is there anything worse than the new Evil Geniuses logo, though?
Well, I mean, that thing just feels like they put a whole bunch of corporates into a room. And then the corporates were like, we like this. And everyone's like, but that doesn't fit your brand. It's like,
nope,
but no, but we
like it. Yeah.
Unpopular opinion. I kind of like the new
God.
UG
Oh my
and, you
God.
Know, what, it might just be the fucking like sadist in me that just loves seeing everybody so triggered about our logo. But yeah, I mean, also, you don't have to worry about the logo curse because I believe in what Prophecy is saying about Dignitas. Because if we look at OG... TI6 year, right? When they were super good coming into the tournament with their green logo, winning everything, and then like, okay, we're going to get a Red Bull logo now, lost, right? Then we look at VP, super good with the orange VP logo coming to TI9 with that fucking green shit, they lost. TI8, they did the same thing. Orange logo, good. Then they went to the purple logo, they lost. But EG, they just finished third all the damn time in Dota. So maybe a new logo. I mean, there's no going down from third, right?
No, like, I'm not saying that, like, the logo is, like, you know, like, the logo is terrible. But, like, if they just iterated on the old one. Because the old one wasn't great, let's be fair. But they're, like, there were ways that you could have done something about it. Like, just, you know, like, jazzed it up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, memes aside, right? I also think I don't buy rebranding. I think rebranding is dumb as hell. I think what's all the point of that marketing in the first place if you're just going to go and rebrand? And Evil Geniuses rebrand, it's not like a small team making a change. Like, it's evil fucking geniuses. So I actually understand why people are upset and shit. Like, I think it was a bit unnecessary.
Like I said, it's just like if they just kept like similar colors, or if they'd, you know, like just modified the logo as opposed to like a whole new. You know, it's just like a very, very basic, nothing fancy about this logo, which is like, I think, really what upset most people.
Oh, this is the real hot fucking take here. They could have released good-looking apparel for us consumers to go and wear. You know, just a business decision there. I don't know, it sounds crazy, but maybe that could have been a good idea.
What, just sell some merch, bro? Is that the answer to any esport problem? Just get better merch, bro.
No. Emphasis on merch we want to wear.
Okay.
Emphasis on the want to wear. So there's lots of merch available, but how much of it are you gonna take out to a date there? Are you gonna wear a fucking Navi blazer on a date?
Think about what you're talking to, bro. I would do it. Yes, I would 100% do it. Like, now, you're just giving me an idea to do, and I want to collect all the ugliest merch from every esports team ever made, and then this is going to be my official date wear. If I'm going out on a date, this is I have to rock this. Now, thanks for the hookup, comrade. I thought about this myself, but thank you.
I mean, if we're being extreme here, if I rock up to a date with a DK burning jacket, I mean, the date's not even necessary. You know, you're going to the home run right there.
She'll be on some, you know, normally I don't like gamers, but I appreciate your fine taste in gaming.
That's what we call a 5 out of 7, man.
You must just show up with like some original signed Dupree shirt in your Gucci, bro. Then it's GG, date over.
All right, so going enough shenanigans. Yeah, we do actually talk about esports on this podcast, you know, I would say local and international esports, but we did actually talk about local last week, so we're getting in our SA stuff every now and again, although it was Cloud9 focused, but this week, we're going to the bigger and better things, you know, talking about, like, holistic esports shit, talking about broadcasting in esports, the good, the bad, and the fucking Dream League. I don't know. Before we start the serious stuff, I need to have a rant, okay? So we've got the Dream League major going on now in the Dota 2 world, okay? It's a quote-unquote major tournament. $1 million prize pool, all that shit. Now, Dream League has been a tournament organizer in Dota for a long time. It's never been, like, the highest production value or, like, the fanciest event, but it had that Dream League charm, you know? They did what they did, and they did it well. Can I say that for this tournament, Snare?
Best tournament, bro.
No, not even close. Okay, so first thing that shocked me today when I started watching the tournament is that they have more breaks from the panel than the actual panel themselves, right? If you watch this, you don't understand what I mean. I mean, there's a panel going on, and they take a break. Not to play some like sponsorship ad, nothing. Just the break for a minute. Then they go back to the panel. They do their thing for whatever reason, and then they take a break once again. Just to show a timer, and they keep on showing the panel, by the way, on the stream. Like the panelists sitting there playing on their phones, like having a conversation and stuff for whatever reason. And then they go back to the panel. And then this is the part that gets me the most. So when Shiva says, "I'm throwing to my casters, OD pixeled and fogged," they take a break.
Yeah, bro.
For a whole minute. The only tournament organizer that I ever see do this, right? But now it's happening. So Dream panel going on there. It's all a good thing. They had things happen like when the game ended, right? Kyle's talking, doing his last bit of analysis. Music starts playing, okay? To go back to the panel thing as well. So they have that irrelevant break between throwing to your casters and the actual panel. Then the one time they randomly throw it to the fucking casters, and Kyle's sitting there playing on his phone and shit, And he gets the shock of his life. He's like, what the hell? Are we on camera? Then the audio works for about 5 seconds. And then it stops working. And then they just show them there. And then the timer goes up. And it's like, what are you guys doing, man? I mean, and this is just not even taking into account.
Just out of curiosity, where is the event being hosted?
Leipzig. I don't know if I'm saying
Leipzig.
Leipzig, yeah.
Yeah. Leipzig, yeah. Okay, that's in Germany. Yeah, that's a bit of an odd one, it must be said.
I mean, I had my friend message me. He's like, yeah, dude, I expected German efficiency and stuff from this major. I was like, well, you're in for a treat, mate. I mean, and this is not even taking into account the endless amount of technical problems. Like, I mean, that was a big problem for the panel today, that to sort out technical issues. In the games, there's been endless pauses. It's been a joke. And didn't some of the panelists forget they were on panel, or they changed the schedule and they were out and they had to enter something?
So basically what happened was that they were supposed to change the panel members, which they also did very weirdly. It was like in the middle of the segment, they were interviewing one of the players from the winning teams. And then mid-segment, they're like, oh, by the way, we're also going to be switching up the panel. So player, when you leave, fly, please take that panel with you. It was like, okay. And they left. And then they were like, okay, cool. So the new panel members are going to be Lizard and Moxie. And then apparently they didn't get the memo that the schedule was changed. So they were like, out. I don't know where. So they were just like, I guess we're doing the pre-show ourselves and then we'll see them for the draft. It was really bizarre. It's kind of weird.
Oh, man. This is just like, rant aside, the worst part about this is that 2 weeks ago or a week ago, whenever the Miner was on, the WePlay Miner, they did a phenomenal job of hosting an event. I mean, the quirky little things they did in production, the kind of that Christmas theme they had going on, it was like a stellar event, minus the horrible 4 a.m. schedule they did. That was disgusting. But other than that...
And minus the garbage loader, yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's a minor. We have a choice there. Like, you know what you're signing up for when you host a minor.
Yeah. It was never going to be good. But yeah, it's kind of like very bizarre decisions. And the thing that you were saying, which really gets to me the most, is I don't mind every now and then, you know, having a thing of we're going to leave the camera on, give it a bit of a young fourth wall break, especially with, like, you know, Rich being out here just going around memeing. That's kind of fun. But it can't also be to the degree where, like, no, this is actually how we're running the show, where the entire show was a fourth wall break. And we're just pretending that this is like an amateur cast, basically, with professionals, which is kind of weird. Because it's also like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like a major, you know? It doesn't feel like the team who wins this tournament is a team that gets to go to TI. It just feels like, oh, whatever, just some other random tournament. Which, again, you can sell, right? And you can do that, and you can make it work. But you have to sort of, like, hard commit to it. You can't be, like, wanting to pretend to still be professional and then fuck it up to the degree where it ends up coming off as amateurish. It's either you hard meme the whole way, and that's the entire express purpose of the event, or you put on a professional broadcast.
I mean, this is something I haven't done on the podcast for a long time, but I have said multiple times, and a lot of other people have also said this, there should be parameters to hosting a major outside of $1 million prize pool. Good, okay, you host major. Like last year when MDL Major went on as well, okay, it was nice for the viewers and stuff because I had a cool panelist like Tsunami there, Stax was doing his things, but in terms of production-wise, that was not major quality shit. I mean, the fan experience is also horrible there. There's a lot more goes into hosting a major than, oh, $1 million prize pool, people play Dota, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. The ugly part of the broadcast discussion was Dream League. We dealt with it. Fuck him. But Dota's still great, so carry on watching. And maybe if you stop watching, the game will just die. Who knows? It's Dota 2 in 2020. I don't know how much longer we got left, Snare.
Game's gonna carry on forever.
All right. So let's talk about... Oh, sorry. Go, Snake. Go.
Nah, I was just going to ask, like, one of the things that I think can make things complicated when it comes to esports and broadcasting is, I think, to make the most of any given broadcast, there's different aspects of each game. It's not like with normal sports, for example, where there might be some crossover with certain sports in terms of how you put forth a broadcast or how you make it good.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's one of these things where it's kind of difficult to also learn from outside of the particular esport that you're in exactly what it takes to put on a good broadcast. We were kind of talking about this when we were like 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the Overwatch debacles. And one of the things with Overwatch is they clearly are struggling with, okay, how do we make this work on our own merits without borrowing? Obviously, you have to borrow some ideas from the outside, but it becomes increasingly clear that, no, you can't actually just copy paste. You kind of have to craft and make unique solutions to the particular problem that you have and that you're trying to solve, right, Joe?
Yeah, 100%. And that's basically where the crux of this discussion comes from, is that there's so many different avenues in esports broadcasting that can be spoken about. I mean, you get the campus saying we need to replicate professional sports and do it like the NBA. You have other campuses saying we need to be as far away from that as possible, keep the personality of things going. We have literally discussion points from what Monte Cristo said for leaving the Overwatch League himself, that he wants more creative control in what he's doing. He's a veteran of the sport. There's a lot of avenues from that. So we can actually start off with that as one of our first topics in this, other than Dream League messing up, is that, like Monte Cristo said, he wants to work in a show where he has more creative control. And immediately, okay, not immediately, 5 days later after leaving the Overwatch League, he has a gig with Cloud9 where him and Thorin are back on the show Summoning Insight, right? Running a sort of like a Skip Bayless, Shannon Sharp, Undisputed, like ESPN show side content. Not a panel at the event, but they're going to get together and do a talk show, very professional, about League of Legends. And before we get into this, I actually watched the Summoning Insight thing. I don't know if that's what it was called during Worlds. I think it was, actually. And I'm not a big League of Legends fan or anything, but I saw this thing, Monty, Loco Doco, and Thorin on hosting a talk show for Worlds. And I actually ended up watching a couple of episodes because it's just interesting. I mean, you have good personalities there. They're doing good content. You have a good mix of humor and actual analysis and things. And it makes for great viewing. And I don't know what you think, Prof, that, I mean, Monty having this complaint about Overwatch League where he felt like he was just another piece of the puzzle, just a robot told what to do, to now having that sort of creative control, running his own show, basically. Not completely, but to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, so Monty and Thorin, like, with this new show that they're picking up, it's not really a new show, it's basically a continuation of the show that they ran during Worlds last year. And they've always had a very, very good vibe. They obviously ran the the Summoning Insight show that ran for, I think it was like 2 or 3 years. So they've got a very good working rapport with each other. And I think people just like to see an analyst personality come through. You know, they can have the hard debates. They're not going to stick to the hard and fast rules of, you know, you can't say something nasty about this play. You sort of have to, play the nice card and sort of talk around the issue. And that's never really been Monty or Thorin's thing. If a player is bad, you must have the platform to be able to call him bad. And it doesn't mean that you hate him. It just means that you're being objective to both yourself. You're being honest with yourself and with the viewers. And I think viewers appreciate that a lot. And you can see it very often in these, in the more mainstream sports, is that, like, you very rarely get actual criticism of a player. Like, you'll get general criticism, but it'll never be like, okay, this player is not as good as X, or, you know, like, he needs to do this better. It's more like, oh no, he had a bad game and he hasn't been playing well. It's like, it's not like they don't point out exactly what the issue is. They're just sort of like, oh, he had a bad game, or, you know, he's had he hasn't been playing well. Like, if you look at, like, someone like David De Gea from Manchester United now, I mean, obviously Manchester United has multiple other problems, but the fact that David De Gea is on such a huge contract and just hasn't been living up to that billing, certainly he deserved it when he got it because of, you know, his previous work. But it's just like, it just feels like nobody's willing to point out certain area problems like that. Now, again, David De Gea is not the biggest problem at a club like Manchester United. It's just, like the easiest example to give type thing, but that's
see what
the kind
Prophecy
of thing
he's doing right now is the kind of fucking tiptoe bullshit the panelists do.
I mean, there's dozens of problems at Manchester United, so let's be real about
that. Yeah, no, that is true.
I mean, at the end of the day, the problem or the thing that Summoning Insight provides is it's more genuine analysis, whether that's real or it appears that way to the fans, and that obviously is what fans will buy into. And then you always have to also acknowledge the fact that a lot of it has to do with both Thorin and Monty's personality. And those are not things you craft overnight. That's years of hard work, building up the trust and the credit that you can to be able to use your personality in that way.
I mean, Snare, what do you think about the Monty and Doa I'm sorry, Monty and Thorin sort of method where, I mean, I think Monty still has a good style and flair about it, but Thorin can just be straight up fucking brutal sometimes, especially coming from the Dota perspective, because if you look at any Dota sort of panel work and stuff, you 99% of the time never see criticism. It's almost like a circle jerk. People are too scared, and for good reason, because the Dota community probably lose their shit if a panelist had to go and flame their fucking beloved Arteezy or whatever, even though they all call him shit in Twitch chat. But from the Dota perspective, what do you think about that?
Look, every time I've been on a panel in my entire life, I haven't been on that many, but every time you put me before camera, at some point I know a producer's going to tell me, yo, dog, maybe just relax, you know, lay off somebody a little bit. I prefer people in any kind of discussion, right? Especially when it comes to talking about something that we all collectively love. Like, speaking honestly about something for me makes it not only easier to talk about the thing in question, but it also makes the discussion meaningful, right? I remember, like, a good example is during this major, there's this moment where Kyle is on the panel and we're talking about these heroes. And he's like, guys, honestly, we're just filling. We just all know these heroes are good, whatever. We can just wait for the next pick. We don't have to, like, try and pretend that it's some great mystery why they've made the decisions that they've made. This just is what it is. And things like that actually make it, it's not a, because, you know, very often it kind of feels like, okay, maybe either the voices should shut up, or this is just sound, background noise effectively, but doesn't add meaningfully to the game. But if you just remove that veneer of, oh, I have to be quote unquote neutral. No, you can say, nah, these guys played badly. They got rolled. They're getting dumpstered right now. This player is playing terribly. And it makes it, you as a viewer, instead of just being like, oh, look at that player playing badly, you now start to notice the effect it's having on the game itself. You're like, oh, actually, it's not just that they're losing, it's him. And if he was playing differently, maybe they'd be able to achieve a different result. And it actually makes it, for me, I honestly can't stand broadcasts of any kind that are too neutral. It's one of the reasons, actually, I stopped watching a lot of streams for esports, in particular in Dota. And if you watch fighting games, fighting game casters and fighting game panelists rip into players. They'll tell you straight up, nah, you can clearly see that was an input error. We can clearly see that you messed up there. You got red. Yo, you didn't practice enough strategies to be ready for this. What the hell are you doing, comrade? And firstly, you as a viewer now have better, like, insight into what's happening. But secondly, as a player, if you're rewatching the broadcast, right, it doesn't really help to hear from the perspective of the panel or the casters, just them being like, well, everything's fine, it's not so bad, you know, they're losing right now, but it's just because the other team is better, or maybe if they wanted this a little bit more, if they played a little bit harder. If they come back and say, no, you made, in our perspective, we think that you made X, Y, and Z mistakes, and then you as a player can reassess, think about whether or not the criticism is fair. If it's unfair, you discard it. If it is fair, though, something to look into. And you can think about, okay, how can I improve in this arena? Thus, that this is no longer a problem. Like, otherwise, it's just like, I don't know, man. I'd rather, do I really need to hear, like, if they don't hear accurate discussion about what's happening with the players and with the teams, I might as well just be listening to FIFA commentary. Because, you know, FIFA commentary is good and it's nice and it's balanced. But whatever, there's clearly no soul there. There's no humanity. Like, why bother paying an entire person to broadcast the game if all you're going to hear could have just been generated by auto text and changes nothing about the game?
I mean, I think one of the biggest issues, and I think Dota especially suffers from this, is that a lot of the talent that works in Dota or high-level players themselves, which means that they tend to be friendly with the players that are playing on stage. You don't want to flame your mate. And the problem is, by doing that, you're unintentionally hampering your own ability to work as a proper analyst at that point. Because if Miracle plays badly, you should have the wherewithal and the ability to say that he played badly. Because I think we can all admit, we've watched Miracle throw games away. Like, he'll, you know, he's as magnificent as he is, there have been one or two games where he overreaches and ends up costing his team the game. But how often do they say that? It's more like, oh, you know, like the team couldn't hold it together, or it was like a bad call. But they never single out a particular player for playing badly. Or 100%. A weak player.
I mean, I could give a real example of this. Earlier in Dream League today, Kuroki in game 3, the draft, obviously Kuroki, the well-known captain from TI1, is a genius and stuff. six panelists in the game today couldn't tell you what his plan was for game three with that draft. Not to say he didn't have a plan, but in practice, it was fucking garbage. I mean, he drafted Legion Commander in a game where Otto Devourer was left in the pool still. There was like, nobody can really could come to a conclusion of why he did what he did. Not to say he didn't have a reason, but it's garbage. And nobody had the bravery to take a stand on
like, just say that you don't like it or you can't see what's going on. But like, the problem is that I just think Dota suffers from this more than some other esports. It's not that, you know, like the other esports don't have it. It's just Dota seems to struggle from it a bit more than most.
No, but I think it was one of these things as well, where the problem, like you were mentioning, a lot of the talent rather is friends with the players, which obviously complicates your ability to speak honestly about what your homies are doing. But another thing is that because of the insular nature of a lot of the talent in the background, I know for a fact a lot of people feel if I put out too much heat, like in front of the audience, it's going to affect my ability to be able to get work down the line, because they're going to holler and say, yo, you see, we see that you wanted to hire that caster. Certain players will be like, nah, we don't like that when this guy comes through. There's somebody in the audience that has some connection tenuously to the power structure, but doesn't like you as a person because of something that you said about a team that they like or a player that they like. So in order to protect your own interests, you're like, you know what, let me not say anything. I mean, when it works out for you, it works really well, right? You get like circumstances like Thorin, who can do what he wants now. He's at the point now, it's like, okay, you've now gained enough clout that you can do this. But we've all seen several examples over the years of talents trying to be honest and trying to be put forth a more authentic air about both themselves and about their opinions about the game into the broadcast, and then it backfires. And this person now is, oh, well, nobody likes you because everybody thinks you're too big for your britches. Instead of hearing what the person says, you get the complaint, oh, who does this guy think he is? He just thinks he's some big shot. Like, he's much bigger than he thinks he actually is, or rather vice versa, sorry. And that also doesn't help. And that, obviously, that's a community problem. Like, and that's, I mean, you can't necessarily solve that structurally, but it's a thing as well.
I mean, I can give an example of that, Snee. You remember that one time Seb fucking lost his shit? I mean, two-time TI champion now, was then coach of OG, Seb, when about Purge, he's like, how can casters just go out of their way and flame teams and yada, yada, yada so much? I was like, this is fucking Purge cast in the game, firstly. And your team was getting raffle stomped there. There's fair reason to flame him, and you want to have a fucking hissy fit on Twitter about this. Like, what is your, like, what? What?
Yeah.
And then the worst part is then community goes and eats this shit up, and then Purge must go on Reddit and fucking apologize for flame casting and stuff. I mean, I don't think that he felt pressured or whatever or anything. That's just Purge's personality. But at the same time, it's like, grow the fuck up. I mean, I actually enjoy Sir Action Slacks on panel, not because he knows that much about Dota. I mean, it's fucking Slacks, but because he's not afraid to go in there, make a joke, and be like, oh, this guy was useless.
Yeah, that was garbage.
You know?
Yeah.
Because nobody else does that shit.
Yeah.
But it works for him. It's like one of those things.
No, but I mean, the thing is, he's built up the credit to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that everybody can acknowledge, is that Purge can do it, but like, most people won't necessarily, I mean, not Purge, Action Slacks can do it, but it's like, most people will acknowledge that like, Slacks isn't necessarily like, you know, the I mean, he memes a lot, and he isn't really the highest level thinker, I guess you could accuse him of being. Whether that's true or not is, I think, barely irrelevant. But the one thing that you sort of miss in Dota is like, a bad guy, in a way.
Yes.
And that like, that really feels largely what Thorin brings, is that because of the credit that he's built up over the years in CSGO, is that he knows, or you know, he can push further than a lot of the others can. And again, in Dota, when you watch it, like, a lot of the panelists, because they're all high level players, they all sort of think the same. There's nobody that's got there's no like deviant thought patterns on the panels, unfortunately. And it's like, I think that ends up hampering a panel. You know, it's, I mean, going back to your earlier example there, Camille, when you're talking about Undisputed with Skip and Shannon, is that like, if you look at how those two operate now, a lot of it is almost certainly done for TV. But the fact that you have Shannon Sharp, who's a huge LeBron fan, you have Skip Bayless, who is like one of the most outspoken LeBron haters, it works well, right? They both have their own thoughts. They both can disagree on things. They can both have a debate. But at the end of the day, they have a disagreement on certain things. Whereas very often when you listen to a a Dota panel, it's just sort of samey at the end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that it's wrong that like that they're, you know, look, that it's bad. It's just it's the same. You need somebody to like, oh, but this, I think, I would have done this maybe, or I would have preferred that, or just anything to just change it up a little bit. And unfortunately, like, while there are all those, you know, all those pieces of talent are absolutely magnificent in what they do, they do need to sometimes just like change it up a bit and add a couple of new things, I think, to just break up that homogeneity that we often see on Dota panels in particular.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think sometimes it even looks... I mean, the biggest issue with me about this is that I think it's by design. Because if I look at some Dota panels and you look at some of the characters who are the panelists, like a Grant, for example, when he's on his stream, and that's how we got famous through his streaming of NA Dota and casting those games solo and stuff. He was a raunchy guy. He was a guy who felt safe to throw out his opinions and stuff. Now today, if you go watch him on the Dream League panel, he's one of the most professional guys. He's very respectful and things. Sure, that's the way you need to be for to be a professional working at these Dota events. But I feel like sometimes if you're at the Beyond the Summit and stuff, you need to utilize. And I feel like in those kind of settings, he's much better utilized because that's where he can be himself. Yeah. Now, I also got a question then, why the talent gets hired in the way they do in the Dota scene? Because I feel like you're hiring people to play the same. I feel like, I mean, Torrent says this in his new B-side video, which we'll get to later, but it just feels like the same drowning on and on and on. And like there's no thought going into how should we do this? How can we craft the show? It's just like, okay, this guy did it like this last time. We did it like this last time. Okay, let's just copy paste and go forward. And I feel like Dota panel specifically has the biggest issue there.
I think in general, esports as a whole suffers from it. It's just like that feeling of nothing's really changed. And yeah. That is the problem, is that we do need, and you know, we're growing, we try to find out where we are, but it's weird because esports players tend to revel in being edgy, but right. Esports or esports viewers don't like edginess when they're watching.
Yeah, it is.
It's like an odd dichotomy because you'd think that, you know, you think that they'd sort of share the enjoyment of edginess, but they don't, which is like the weird part for me. It's like, so, you know, it's like, so where do you exactly stand? Because like you're saying, Grant came up and he's like a bit of an edgy guy and, you know, he's sort of out there. But then on the other hand, it's like, but when he is edgy or when he is on a panel, then he can't be, because as soon as he gets edgy, they're like, the whole community is in an uproar and like they all hate him. So yeah. It's like, what does this piece, you know, like where does he stand? What does he exactly do?
Yeah, it creates, like you said, it's such a weird dichotomy, right? Just a piece of news. Our man Snare has got load shedding, so he's gone. But me and Prophet are still here to continue the thing. So yeah, that's not, international panels don't have to deal with is load shedding. But here in South Africa, we got it. It's real. It's real, boys. Feels bad, man.
Does feel very, very bad.
I think we could harp on about the sort of yields on panels endlessly, but we do have other things to talk about, right? So or other aspects to talk about. So in terms of the creative content, in terms of not on panel, I mean like, you know, side content you make, interviews, like basically ads created for companies during events and such. We have, like I said, we had Torrent now in his recent B-side video making a lot of saying, oh no, we need more creative control, we'd like to do this, he feels so good, he gets to run his own show or whatever. Maybe you can give us a better breakdown on that just now, Prof. And then we have Monty saying from Overwatch League that he felt like talent didn't have any input into the kind of content we're doing and stuff. And I feel like that was a problem there. But on the Dota side of it, in terms of complaining about panels and stuff, but in terms of the content we create, that's almost solely done by the characters such as Sir Action Slack. You have the same talent guys acting in these videos. I mean, we have basically content events in the form of Beyond the Summit. I mean, there's so much creative content there, but in other esports, it's lacking. So where do you think other esports can sort of jack up on that, Prof?
Well, I mean, every esport is different. It's, I can't just sit here and say, oh, this is 100% the correct way to do anything. And that's the real issue at the end of the day, is that each esport has its own vibe. So where you have like the FGC, they can get like full on flamey. You can't necessarily do that in a different event, which is, you know, like a lot less casual, etc. So I think each esport needs to basically figure out, or its players need to figure out what they want exactly, and then build from there. But if you're looking at something like, let's start with Dota and League of Legends, right? They tend to be games that require, or that tend to attract people that are a little bit more, what is the correct term? I mean, you could almost say nerds. Let's be real, the nerds, or the, you know, like the guys that are like a little bit more cerebral's not the correct word. I think you could say like CS:GO is like more like the jockey sport, whereas League of Legends and CS:GO definitely aren't. I mean, you can go even, you know, more nerdy and go something like StarCraft, etc.
Yeah, like guys who are like pay attention to the details, yeah, that kind of
so
stuff. Like
those kind of things do lend themselves to much more deep analysis, where you can have a whole panel of guests sitting and you know, sitting there and talking for long periods of time, where they go incredibly in depth on specific instances, and that'll work for that kind of thing. But you know, in an esport like, for instance, Overwatch or CS:GO, like that kind of analysis, it's very difficult to do in a panel setting, and it's not as easy to talk about. So you can get away with a little bit more, you know, a little bit less deep level discussions. I think it's not that they don't have their place. I think it's just for CS:GO, you tend to want separate side content for that, whereas for Dota and League of Legends, you might want your side content to be a little bit more lighthearted, because it is, you know, very, very nerdy when the game is on, but you want a little bit more action slacks type content on the side. And that's the kind of thing, you know, it's like you don't want to go, again, super deep level analysis, because you see enough of that while you're watching the game.
That's a good point. So in terms, yeah, you have to kind of diversify then from the flip side of it. But
yeah,
this is an interesting topic for me, the content that gets created in esports for the various games like Dota, League of Legends, CS:GO, etc. Because there was an interesting tweet I saw by Thoran about a month ago. I didn't save the tweet, so I'm not going to quote it word for word. But basically what he was saying is there was a thread going on, and he was like, in 10 years time, people are going to come back and ask the sports industry are going to come back and talk to esports people on how to run a broadcast. And he said, yeah, the sad thing, the important thing about this is I'm not even fucking joking. So I saw that and I thought it was a very interesting tweet, because, you know, we usually think about sports as the benchmark, and now Thoran is going out here and saying we actually ahead of the curve. And I don't know how much I believe that in some things, but I think in terms of creative content, I think I agree. Obviously, I don't watch many esports, but from the Dota side, why I say this is because when I watch a piece of Dota content done by like Beyond the Summit, or like a Action Stacks video, I don't think the TI videos count, because they're not meant to be ads. It's just good content. But when you're doing a content piece, like that side shop piece that Purge and them did for ESL in, I think it was the Birmingham event, or maybe it was a Netherlands event. I'm not completely sure which one, but that piece of content, why to me it's so important and like so revolutionary, is that it's essentially an ad, right? You're doing an ad for DHL or for Mercedes or one of these people, and you're watching this thing, and you're not watching it as an ad. You're watching it as, wow, this is such a cool piece of content, right? And I feel like if you can advertise in that way, it feels so good. I mean, another good example of this was the Moondog production, the Midas House tournament they did, where they did the Malware Bytes ads, and the way they did the ads for Malware Bytes, because they were the headline sponsor, they were like integrating it into content and stuff. They were doing such cool things that I was like, oh wow, okay, maybe esports is a bit behind in some things, but in this, because we're hustling and like fighting to break even and stuff in tournaments, we go across like the Call of Duty, we like go over the line in terms of, we got to make this profitable, we got to make it worth it for sponsors. We do such innovative things. And I think that was a really good example of that. So I think in that regard, I actually think esports, and I'm agreeing with Thoran, are actually ahead of the sort of standard ad you see on TV playing during Wimbledon, for example.
Well, I mean, if you think about like the challenges that we have in esports as well, like we basically have to figure out ways to keep people entertained. And that, I mean, it's like if you look at, for example, you want to take just an easy example, is look at the difference between an advert made in South Africa and an advert made in America. The adverts in South Africa regularly win international awards because, I mean, for example, Nando's, they've always got like a very, very clever little advertising campaign. Now, they always have complaints about their advertising campaigns because they are sort of on the nose. But you also do have to admit that they, like, you tend to remember those adverts.
Yeah.
And yet, when you go and watch an American advert, they are like, they don't even really try to be subtle about anything. There's a lot of adverts that are just sort of like, oh, do this and this and this. And, you know, like, this is how we save you money by doing, you know, like, if you join this insurance, you save 17%. And that's like literally their tagline. It's like, but how am I supposed to even remember what company you are? You're just another one of the, you know, 10 million faceless brands that, you know, appear. So I do think that if you look at that kind of thing, esports has shown a remarkable level of having to innovate because we've never had money. So we have to stretch it as far as we can. And as a result, we've had to like monetize or attempt to monetize different ways, like streaming and all the rest. And there's more engagement with pros. I mean, like, how easy is it to get a hold of someone like LeBron James these days?
Impossible.
It's damn near impossible. It's just a regular guy on the street. But with an esports player, now it is increasing and it is becoming more difficult to get hold of them, but you can still genuinely, you know, catch them on a stream every now and then, or you can catch them at multiple live events that don't cost an arm and a leg yet. They tend to travel around the world, so it's easy. You know, you don't have to travel to America to go watch LeBron James. And then, you know, half the season he plays in Los Angeles and another half he's in various countries, various cities around the U.S. It just makes your life easier. And I think as a result of that, esports is certainly it's going to change. What I'm saying right now probably won't hold, you know, forever. But it does mean that when traditional sports broadcasting comes along, they'll see a lot of the things that we've had to do differently. Because if you look at some of the things, our panels are still like, they go a lot more in depth than some traditional sports panels these days. If you go and watch a traditional sports panel for the Rugby World Cup, for instance, like half of what they're saying is like, you could read that off a post-it note. Like they're not saying anything that like you could actually, you know, learn about. It's like, oh no, you know, he played well, and the boys tried really hard, and you could see there was a lot of effort. Like, that's just nothing statements. It's got nothing to do with what's actually happened in the game. I mean, you're saying that to make it to a Rugby World Cup final, both teams haven't played hard or tried hard, and the one team wanted it more. What does wanted it more mean?
I mean,
you know, it's like it that's not really. To my brain, that's not a, like proper analysis at all. It's not really content. Whereas if you look in esports, what do you have to do? It's like, oh, after the, you know, the TI Major Final, you'll have, I mean, I don't know if he still does it, but PPD, he used to do that thing. Oh, and then he made breakdowns of how and why he drafted a specific composition in a tournament. That is like, that's gold level analysis. I mean, imagine thinking that like, you know, Greg Popovich, he explains to you how and why he set up his team like that. You can already see it if you look. I can't remember the channel, but anybody that's actually interested in it, there's a channel specifically for soccer, right? Where they get some of the greatest coaches of all time and they have them talk about one specific game. And the one that I remember watching was the Mourinho game when he was still the manager of Inter, when they won the triple in, I think it was 2010, if I remember correctly. But they specifically had him break down how he set up Inter to defeat Barcelona, because it's considered to be one of the most magnificent coaching and managerial jobs ever in how they beat basically prime Barcelona with a team that was far, far worse. And Mourinho himself sits there and explains to you the thought processes, how they specifically marked certain players, what they were looking out for. And that kind of content, PPD was doing that 3-4 years ago. Now think about how valuable that kind of thing is. Oh, you've got LeBron James after the NBA Finals. You know, the season's done, so they're probably going to change quite a few of the setups. But he sits down and explains to you, oh, this was my objective in game 3. You know, I was trying to get this done. I was told, you know, this guy, he like shifts a little bit to the left when you post up on him, etc. And like, think about how amazing that kind of content would be. And It's easy content to make. That probably takes, what, half a day of LeBron James' time? Yeah, that's sure. That's a stupid amounts of money that he's worth that you're going to get him for that. But think about how many people are actually interested in that kind of thing, rather than just the face level of like, oh, the game was good and LeBron played well and, you know, LeBron scored 33 points in the second half. And it's like, those are meaningless stats to people that don't really care. But if you
it's
have
like we
people,
also watch the game, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's just like, if you have people sitting down and then actually explaining in depth how this kind of thing works, I guarantee you'd get more value out of that stuff.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I completely agree with what you're saying, because, I mean, I was just bagging on the Dota panelists like 5 minutes ago, but a good example of this is, again, going back to Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp. Skip Bayless is a journalist for, I don't know, like 30 years in sports or whatever, and a job that him and Shannon Sharp have to do is like talk about American sports and whatever, and they got contracts at Fox News, they're on a daily show and things. But this Skip Bayless guy, who got a massive contract from Fox News, probably earns more in a year than the entire TI talent payroll is for that event.
Yeah.
Everybody working there is talent, right? That's how much this guy gets paid. There's an infamous video of him on YouTube where one of the owners of the NBA team comes on to a show with him and absolutely demolishes him. And the things that Skip Bayless has said is like what the examples Prophecy was giving about the Rugby World Cup guys. Like, oh, this team tried so hard. These guys played hard. They attacked. They, you know, just these vagaries, not saying anything, just like any, just dropping down these fancy words. And then this, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks team, Mark Cuban, who was there with him, just starts asking him, but we played zone defense here. We did this. We did that. Then he, at some point, Skip Bayless is like, no, but LeBron James didn't try hard enough. He's like, what the fuck does that mean? You can ask any NBA player in the world who's playing in the finals and ask them how much they want to win this, how much they're trying. They're all trying, right? That's just the fact. And at some point, Skip Bayless keeps on going. And he just asked him, what is a zone defense, Skip? Like, it's a fairly simple thing in basketball. Obviously, I'm not a basketball expert, so I can't explain to you what zone defense is. But
it's basically, so zone defense, they use it in multiple sports. But basically, instead of one player marks another player, they have an area of the court they have to defend.
Oh, okay. So it's same like in soccer, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so he asked Skip Bayless this. Now, Skip Bayless makes a living of fucking calling LeBron James trash every other night. And Skip Bayless can't answer. And it's like, oh shit, so this guy's going and saying things the whole day on television but doesn't know what the fuck he's really talking about. Now, I don't know how much he knows about the other games he talked about, football, this, that, but he doesn't really know that much about basketball, but yet he makes a fucking living off this. In esports, that can almost never happen, right? Like,
yeah, I mean,
anybody who says something wrong, the fucking panel host who does not even job is to talk about fucking Dota, says something wrong, you have Twitch chat up in fucking arms about it, right, Prof?
But I mean, the thing is, it's not even that Skip Bayless doesn't know, it's that he pretends that he might not. Like, if he doesn't know, then he pretends that he doesn't know. You know, it's the whole gimmick. It's why a person like Thorin can, people will say, oh, he knows nothing, but that's not his job on the panel. Just yes. Like it's not Skip Bayless's job on that panel to make his co-host look foolish. They both have to take their licks, and by taking licks, it creates that, like, oh, you know, it's like tribal. It's like, oh, it's my team versus your team. And if I'm team Skip and your team Shannon, it's like, oh, did you check how Skip wrecked Shannon yesterday? And then it creates like a conversation piece. And that's, you want that kind of thing to occur. And I think if you look at something like Skip and Shannon or Undisputed, they've done it very, very well.
Yeah.
100%. But we haven't yet reached that specifically in Dota, for instance. I think mostly because, like, I know Thorin has spoken before about Skip Bayless. I don't remember exactly whether he was pro the guy or anti the guy, but, like, I think he's taken a lot of that on board, and he's become the bad guy. And as everybody says, like, you know, it's like you have to have a bad guy for there to be a hero.
So no, 100%.
You have to have a bad guy on the panel or... you know, it just creates like an extra level that allows people to get more into it. Because if you just have two guys that are talking high level mathematics to one another, nobody's going to know what they're talking about. But you have this guy is, you know, he's the bad guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about versus the good guy who knows everything that he's talking about. Like, people buy into that on like the most base psychological level. You buy into that. You might like, you can, it's like the debates around LeBron. Like, whether you hate or LeBron or love him, you're still gonna have an opinion of him, and exactly. you'll have that debate forever. And that's the kind of thing that we need more of in esports. Is that I think we're too desperate to become traditional sports where they don't ever want to be mean, and they don't ever want to get to the root of a problem as an analyst when you are paid to do that. It's too easy for the traditional sports analysts to talk in vagaries. And I mean, you could see it the other day with I think it was Robin Van Persie, who, like, he was never a teammate of what's the Manchester United coach's name?
Oh, Solskjaer.
Yeah. So he never played with Solskjaer, right? So when they put him on a panel, he quite aggressively pointed out that Solskjaer was, like, creating a lot of problems with Manchester United. And the other guy on the panel was a friend of Solskjaer, or played with Solskjaer, right? Didn't want to say anything nasty about him. So now I ask you, what's more useful? A person that's willing to point out problems and say some of them, at least, are Solskjaer's. And on the other hand, you have a panelist who's like, oh, no, the players are not playing well. You know, there's clearly, like, something wrong in the team, and the team's not doing... It's like, no. Here are some of the problems. I'm not saying, you know, it's like, it's not that Solskjaer is the only problem, but he is a problem. And that's the thing, is that, like, if you want proper analysis, that kind of thing has to be coming through. And we're better at that, far better at that in esports than traditional sports is. And I think traditional sports will look at that in esports and eventually get back to it, or take it on board a little bit more, because I think it improves the whole production. And esports needs to learn to just shave off the rough edges. You know, you still need to keep the underlying essence of esports. You still need to have the ability to walk onto a panel and say, you know what, Kuroki drafted like a potato this morning. He didn't. That was not a good draft. Whether he had a plan or not, that plan failed and the draft was bad. And you need to be able to say that without fear of the players getting up in arms and crying on Twitter. It's like your job is to give your honest opinion about something.
Yeah, and then when you acknowledge you can have a conversation like that, like Prof just pointed out, you back in the situation where you can have a similar thing to Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharpe. You can have one guy on the panel saying, Kuroki drafted garbage, and you can have another guy there giving the player's perspective, no, this could have been going through his mind. You actually have then a discussion taking place. You have engaging content. Then you can take Team Capitalist or Team Blitz here, because they're at it, and then... it feels engaging instead of Cap saying, yeah, the Legion Commander wasn't a good pick, and then Blitz is going, oh yeah, Legion Commander, he lost the laning stage. Like, fuck, bros, we watched the same game as y'all. You don't need to explain that again to us, you know?
Yep. And I mean, think about how easy it is to just branch off content with that.
Yeah.
Oh, you had a 20-minute panel now that's broken down the game at large, but they can't get to everything. So what do they do after, you know, it's like, did they do it? I think it was after TI last year when they had like the late night show. That kind of thing. The entire show is, you can take a single, like, what was the game of the day, for example? Let's say, just picking a game, it's like Na'Vi versus Alliance, right? And the whole show is, today's game of the day is Na'Vi versus Alliance, and we're going to break down every single aspect of this. You got three of the best minds in Dota sitting there. You got a panel host, and they sit and break down that game in minute detail. Yeah. What did this player do? Does the draft help them here? What is all this? Where does the advantage come from here and there? And I mean, let's be real. If anybody that's worked at a background at an esports event, the players themselves will know this. You can talk forever about something that you enjoy.
Right.
And you can easily get those panelists to sit there for an extra hour or two, if paid correctly, and, to create good content. And if you look at the dearth of that level of content in traditional sports, they don't have that kind of thing. They just have, like, the same basic talking heads. Here's what's going on. And, each one has their little opinion, but they don't really ever talk about anything. They just have, like, a couple of, you know, like, highlighted quotes that they keep repeating ad nauseum, and it just gets boring after a while. Like, you're just not interested. And it's, you need, well, I think traditional broadcasting is going to start looking at ways to retain viewers. Because let's be honest, how many people these days watch SuperSport for anything other than a live game?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, even esports has this problem, to be perfectly frank. I mean, I think somebody in the scene having a chat with me, and he told me, gave me the stats. He's like, in any esports match you watch, after the game ends and the panel, Kaigachi panel, 40% of your viewers you lose instantly.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is going to happen, but I think that's just the nature of people who are not as interested in analysis or that kind of content. But
esports is much worse.
Yeah. I mean, esports needs to learn basically. Esports needs to learn, I think, how to make more fun content, which traditional sports has mastered sort of because that's their filler. Like the build up and it's like the build up to the TI final. And
Right. Here's
this guy's story, and here's that guy's story, and here's this, and here's that. And League of Legends has done a better job of that, I think, especially because they have that week between the semifinals and the final, which allows them to craft a whole of a lot of the narratives in that week. Whereas Dota is sort of like, you sort of have to build a narrative as you go, and they both have their advantages and sort of strike while the iron is hot for a Dota versus the slow burn of League of Legends. But I think that esports, as we get more money, it'll allow us to do something like that. And that's the one thing that, to bring it full circle, that is what Thorin being on this B-side league is probably going to bring. Is, I think he's for a very, very long period of time wanted to do something like this, where he's the one that runs the show, and he'll, he gets to build the narratives that he wants. He gets to talk about each individual team throughout the season, rather than if we're being honest, if you think about Undisputed, right? What is Undisputed right now? It's during NFL season, it's like they have six segments. Three of them are about the Dallas Cowboys. Whether the Cowboys are the worst team in the league or the best team in the league, they get talked about in every single game, whether they played or not. Then the other three segments are LeBron James. But how many teams are there in the NBA? It's like, what, 28 or something? 29?
Yeah.
And in the NFL, there's 32. You wouldn't know it from watching those games because they never talk about them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that when you've got the amount of money that they do in traditional broadcasting, it should be easy to talk about every single game or to talk about every single team, or to at least create a piece of every single team's content. And in esports, we've had to do that. Each organization has had to learn how to basically build themselves up. So Cloud9 will release those silly little videos. Dignitas released three separate little videos today about the old NIP players joining them. I mean, what was the last piece of content that you saw from Milwaukee Bucks?
No, that's a very good point.
And that's the problem. That's the problem, is that if each team is forced to build their own market, as it were, each team knows, or each team becomes a little bit more unique. Because if we're honest, how many teams in every sport are just faceless? And even in esports, we only really remember the big ones because the big ones have done a very good job at A, being successful. That is always going to get you a lot of fans, but B, also marketing themselves well.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I think another good example in esports, a very funny one, is the Team Empire Twitter account, right? Team Empire have been garbage since TI4 when Resolution was still there, but they're still probably one of the most followed, retweet accounts out there, because the guy who runs it is just like a massive meme lord. He goes out of his ways to make jokes all the time and things, and that's what they became known for. They called him a meme pyre and stuff. Maybe not a great, it's creating a narrative for your brand when there really shouldn't even be one. So a lot of innovative stuff gets done there. So I kind of agree with your point, where maybe sports teams could get in on that sort of business as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that that's the kind of thing that we need to look forward to in the future. It's the kind of things that esports is already doing, traditional sports isn't. But traditional sports has the money to do it, and esports doesn't.
Yeah, that's also a thing. So it was interesting with the Thorin's B-side project, which if to explain a bit more, is now there's going to be a league, am I correct in saying this, Prof?
It's one of the two leagues for CSGO that are coming up this year. B-Site is the... It used to be, for anybody that doesn't know, it used to be the old ECS run by Faceit. ECS is now no longer existing. This B-Site league will be run by Faceit in its stead.
Well, codename B-Site. We don't actually know the name of the league yet.
It's not, the actual official name,
So, yeah, why it's interesting and why we're bringing it up is because Thorin, like we said, is going to be the creative director of this thing. So he's going to be calling the shots. He's always made claims about how he could run the show like this. We need to do this kind of content in esports. And he's been very confident about it. I mean, his video on it was confident. His tweets have been confident. So if he could back it up, it would be great to see what he does. I mean, he's putting himself out there. So if it fucks up, it's going to be like, well, this is Thorin's fault as well. So it would be great to see what he does there. And I found it interesting watching that B-Site video just to, because hearing him what he says, like, oh, I've been a vet for 15 years, been wanting to do content like this for so long. And it was quite funny because I think about Sir Action Slacks, he kind of approached Valve. He's like, yo, I have a good idea of content, whatever we can do. And he was sort of the showrunner for fucking TI last year, the year before. So it was pretty cool to see, like, the difference. Again, when we talk about esports, each esports is different in terms of how people get dealt with, the kind of content we see and such. So it'll be very interesting to see how it goes in CSGO with Thorin running the show there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot is riding on him. Let's put it that way. Like, he's taken on a lot of responsibility to try and make this work. So, you know, good luck to the guy. Maybe it's not as big a success as the, as Slacks's pieces were last year for TI, but it's at least an attempt to do something different.
Yeah.
And right now we just don't have enough third-party content. You know, you've got dozens of players with YouTube channels and Twitch streams that can sit there and break down a game for you, and there are dozens. You'll see them, you'll find them everywhere. Smoke Executes for CSGO, you'll find out, like, you know, how to play a certain hero in Dota. But we need more of that, but we need more, I think, not necessarily high quality, because you, like, those people already put enough quality behind it, but maybe just more style and panache.
Yeah.
I think is really what we want.
Which will be interesting to see going forward for CSGO. Now, the last topic I want to bring up for in terms of the broadcasting in esports is, because I think we spoke a lot about panels and basically the whole show about panels, but I want to talk about commentary in esports, because I think commentary in esports is where, I'm not of the opinion that esports is ahead of sports broadcasting. I think some things are, but I feel like a lot of the things is we're kind of lacking, and especially production and stuff, but that comes with the money as well. Yeah. But in commentary, I actually do believe that esports is ahead. If I look at a commentator like OD Pixel, for example, right? He's probably one of the most famous Dota 2 casters, play-by-play. He's probably the most famous at the moment. And if I look at him, his technical skill is a big part of it. I mean, they call him the rap god. He can shout out, he can call things so fast, very clear and such. But what I like about him, and I think he's a very good example of that, is his personality comes through. There's so many jokes he makes. He makes off comments. Everybody knows he's like bad at Dota. So he'll say something like, I think this was fucking garbage that this guy did. Besides the swearing, of course, because it's not me casting. And then he's like, but then again, what do we know? We're just idiots here, right? It's like, you hear that kind of comment. It's so entertaining to see. I think when I watch Dota cast as well, some of the times I laugh because when the game's really boring and the commentators stop talking about the game and talk about other things that are completely irrelevant to Dota, like their story from school or something. Mm-hmm. If you had to see that in a sports broadcast, be like, oh, that's so unprofessional, that's fucking horrible, whatever. But I enjoy that. Like, I think that's because
think about this, Camille. Think about most of what you hear when you hear a soccer game.
We don't remember any of it, bro.
Henderson to Salah, back to Firmino, back to Henderson, Salah. It's just like they're literally just reading players' names. Like, how is that actual? How is that like any interesting? You could just like switch between three or four different channels. And it's like all you'll have is just a different accent pronouncing the names.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Like, that is a problem in soccer, it's in rugby, it's in, I mean, maybe not as much in the NFL because they stop permanently. But any sort of thing that just constantly is happening, you know, like where the sport is constantly continuing, it's just literally repeating names out over and over and over for like 70% of the broadcast. They do add in tidbits here and there, but in general, there's not much to the broadcasting, whereas in esports, you've got a Dota game. All right, well, this Dota game can be an hour long, maybe 20 minutes of total action. You're going to need to find a way to fill that space. And that's where you'll come up with the silly little jokes and the you know, the the interesting stories that you've had about players, and you know, this is how things used to run back in the day. And it's like, that is, those are invaluable skills to have as a broadcast talent, because it means that if there is ever a technical fault, which at the moment there are dozens of in every esport, they can fill that effectively.
Yeah.
And if you did that, if it, that sort of thing happened in a sports event, what would happen? Or they'd throw it to adverts while they try to solve it, or they'd put up a "sorry, we will be back soon" screen, and that would just absolutely kill people's interest in watching a game. Whereas you can at least retain more viewers. I'm not saying you're going to retain more than 50% if there is a very, very long tech pause, but you'll at least have more viewers staying just to listen to these funny little stories, and the talent themselves are able to inject their personalities into the game and attract people to watch the game, to listen to them. Because that's one of the large reasons why Overwatch did so well, or Overwatch League did so well at the beginning, is that people joined not just because it was, oh, let's see what this whole, you know, this whole noise is about. It's like, oh, I get to watch Monty and Doa again, or I get to watch Semler again, or I get to see Puckett. And those are invaluable things to have. Like, how often do you turn on a soccer game and like you don't even know who's who's commentating? Like, yeah, the names might pop up at the beginning, but it pops up and by 20 minutes time you've forgotten everything.
And that is fair. And I think a lot of it also doesn't have to do with like the talent can't do it in these sports, right? I think that's just the way the industry has been shaped. That's why I think these conversations are important now, because you don't want to get to a stage in esports when it's like,
when it is that.
10 years from now, we're still having the same conversation about, oh yeah, Miracle played a good top lane. It was quite solid there. We want to be having better conversations, right?
Yeah, it just creates better and more interesting content for people to watch, rather than just vagary and nothing comments.
100%. And I think maybe the best sports example I've seen of this is again, okay, I know we're going back to panels and I said we keep it to commentary, is like Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal on Inside the NBA, I think that show's called. That's like two super big name, hotshot, well-respected players with good personalities. So there you get a good balance of, you know, these two guys just dicking around because they have that relationship, Shaq and a fool, you know, that whole thing. But also great in-depth analysis because these guys really do know what goes on at the top of the game. And I think when we get to that, eventually we start having pros and such retiring in Dota and some coming on the panels in CS, in these games. Once we start to mature as scenes, if we can find that balance, it'll be really great to see.
If we can find the balance now, it means that by the time we get to that stage where we do have the money flowing in, we've already got everything in place to just make it better.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I had this joke discussion with somebody on Twitter. Somebody said, Simple and Zaiwu are the Messi and Ronaldo of CSGO. And I was like, yeah, if they're still there in 10 years doing the same things, then you can say that. Somebody's like, man, CSGO hasn't even been out for 10 years. And I was like, I'm just making a joke, but that's the truth. I mean, we're so early in esports here. We're having these discussions, comparing it to regular sports and stuff. But, I mean, in terms of like having panels and stuff, this is a very recent thing. I mean, 10 years ago, esports didn't look like this, right?
No, so not even close.
It will be interesting to see how we evolve. And hopefully it evolves in the fun way, not the talking head way.
Look, talking heads have their place, but you don't want every single piece of content to be that.
For sure. For sure. So I feel like we've hopped on now for a long time. We wanna add any more things. There is more to this discussion, by the way, but I don't know. It feels like we've maybe run its course a bit, Prof.
Mm.
Mm. The last piece of analysis there from Prof. I dig it. But yeah, it has been an absolute pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pity Snare kind of dipped out. I'm sure we would have had an extra 30 minutes of viewers here dropping his monologues and such. But that is our episode. This was number 73. Catch us all on Twitter at @KChickDay, @_Snare_, @PRFECI Gaming, and of course the publication at Esports Central ZA on Facebook, at Twitter at EsportsCNTRL, and of course at the World Wide Web at esportscentral.co.za. Thank you all for listening and goodbye.